News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Good morning. It is 6 minutes after 8 o'clock on FM Talk 106.5. Dan Brennan, Dalton Arwig, and some storms today we can expect. Dr. Bill's got that in our forecast for sure, so carry your umbrella and don't leave it behind like I do 9 out of 10 times. It's, as we've been mentioning today and talking yesterday, also promoting the fact that U.S. Congressman Dan Crenshaw is going to join us on the show today live on Mobile Mornings, and in fact, he's on with us right now. Congressman, good morning to you.
Hey, good morning. Great to be with you.
Yes, sir. Glad to have you with us. Let's start in Afghanistan. I don't even know if we can get away from this subject, but first and foremost, the withdrawal strategy from Afghanistan. I saw your piece in the Wall Street Journal. I've seen your tweets. I mean, what was it?
Well, geez. I mean, the strategy, the underlying philosophy has long been based on emotion. And it's been very frustrating to me for a long time. And, you know, that emotion basically boils down to a slogan, you know, no more endless wars. And this was the singular focus of the Biden administration. And then, look, it's been a campaign promise from every president since Bush. But then reality hits, and you realize, well, you know, we're in an endless war with an ideology that that will not stop, and, you know, with Islamic extremism. So once you accept that, you understand that these choices are a little bit more difficult. So I think that's the broader conversation there. But as far as the strategy specifically on this one, it didn't seem that there was one. It seemed that the only goal was to get us down to zero so that he could fulfill a campaign promise. He didn't really care how he got there. And he didn't heed the advice of much of the members of the military, or at least, you know, the Secretary of Defense, General Milley, who did not advise to pull out this quickly or that rapidly, and especially given conditions on the ground. But if you do want to go down to zero quickly, there is no good strategy. You know, there isn't a good one. The only, you have to stop and actually slow down the process completely, because it will always end up like this. It's very frustrating.
How is troop morale right now, Congressman?
Well, I don't have a good sense of it. I'm sure people are unhappy. You know, what's interesting is I talk to Gold Star families a lot, and, you know, Americans more broadly and the general public has it wrong in many ways. What veterans think and what Gold Star families think, you know, they want to believe that Gold Star families feel victimized. They want to believe that, and they want to believe that if we rally to bring the troops home, then it'll be a service to those who have sacrificed and a service to veterans and Gold Star families. And if that's what somebody's thinking is, it could not be more wrong. That is, for, you know, as a veteran, I say, look, we don't need your pity. We don't need your saviorship. Okay, we know why we go over there. And when I hear from Gold Star families, I had a fascinating discussion yesterday. Their main concern right now is, wait a second, you know, my son sacrificed for this country to keep this country safe. We had no more 9/11s for 20 years because we were fighting them over there instead of on our shores. And now, who's going to do that? I mean, that's actually the concern, because that's actually been the strategic objective of this entire time. And Americans lost track of that, left and right. Americans lost track of that fact. Leaders never really communicated that fact well. And that's how we ended up here. Like, it's a lot more complicated, or I don't know if that's complicated, but it's a lot more profound than just a bungled departure strategy. And which there was, but the problem is much more deep than that.
U.S. Congressman Dan Crenshaw with Dan and Dalton this morning.
Congressman, now the talk is the 1,500 Americans that are supposedly stuck in Afghanistan, and so many of our Afghan allies the same. How do you think this looks on the international stage to both our adversaries and our allies, as it almost looks like we kind of fumbled the bag there trying to get these Americans out?
Well, it looks terrible on many fronts. Our allies, like the British, for instance, are pretty upset, understandably. They advised against this kind of pullout, and their presence in Afghanistan is reliant upon us. So when we pull out, our allies are sort of left hanging out. They're left with the bag. And, you know, there actually is one amazing story of British SAS going in to rescue their own troops in Kandahar, landing a giant C-130 in the desert and doing this kind of daring rescue mission. You know, this was all unnecessary. This didn't have to turn out this way, but this is how they had to do it because Biden wanted this rapid pullout. But when it comes to allies like our Afghan allies, for instance, I mean, this has long-term implications. It's unclear how we'll ever get anybody to work with us, which is important, especially in the special operations community. This is constantly what we do. But it's hard to see how we'll ever be able to recruit sources, to recruit even contractors or interpreters when they've been left out to dry the way they have.
Can you kind of talk a little bit more in detail about how these Afghans assisted the special forces and our military as a whole? I know translators have been mentioned like you just did and sources, but how big of a help were so many of these Afghans on the ground?
Well, they're critical. You really can't do missions without being able to speak to the population or speak to your partner force. I mean, you know, for years we've been working with Afghan military. You can't talk to them unless you have interpreters. The interpreters are constantly working. They're constantly on the front lines with us. They're mission essential on every single thing we do. Their value really can't be overstated. And it's a shame that we would even consider leaving without making sure that every one of them who wants to get out is out.
Congressman, without going into detail on exactly what special forces have been doing over there for years and decades, actually, are we now, as a nation here on the home front, more vulnerable?
Oh, absolutely. We think Al-Qaeda will be back to external operations within a year or so. Right? You know, they've been decimated over the years, so they never went away because you can't make this go away. You know, I think that confuses a lot of people. You know, they want to believe that there's this sort of uniformed enemy that we're fighting, but that's never been what it is. It's an ideology. It lives within the population. And you will always be fighting it because they're always fighting you. And the sooner we just come around to that fact, the better off we'll be. We can stop having these silly debates and making these stupid mistakes. The reality is we have no ability to monitor terrorism activities in Afghanistan. We have no ability to do that whatsoever. None of the neighboring countries will let us use their air bases. So, you know, we can only fly there from Qatar and then get a couple hours of airtime to monitor things. And, you know, even that, just by the way, people think, well, as long as we have assets in the sky, we can stop them. That's not true either. I mean, it's just one asset in the sky. You can't monitor everything. You really need eyes and ears on the ground. You need human intelligence. You know, you need a presence. You need a partner to work with, and we have none of that now. We gave it up. We had it just a few weeks ago, and then we gave it up.
And just bringing it back to D.C., I mean, are there going to be hearings to review what happened? You know, will the American people get any answers? Will you and Congress get any answers?
There will be. There'll be lots of hearings. You know, that blame game will start. Even Democrats want to do that. So I think it will happen, but, you know, I don't want anybody to think you're going to get any revelation of answers. We know the answers. I already know all the answers. That's the truth. Mm-hmm. And the truth is the answer is very simple. We let an emotional slogan of no more endless wars drive our foreign policy. And Biden has been the only president foolish enough to actually implement that emotional slogan.
Congressman, you know, the deadline set by, I believe, the Biden administration initially of August 31st that then became a red line set by the Taliban. Biden still seems to think we're going to be done and out there by the 31st, regardless of what people on the ground say or other leaders. What do you think? I mean, would he pull us all the way out with Americans that still want to come back home stuck in Afghanistan?
unfortunately, it seems like that's exactly what he's going to do. And you're right, he's lying when he says that we're going to get everybody out by then. Secretary of State has repeated this lie. Jen Psaki has repeated this lie. There's no way we're getting everybody out by August 31st. It's just not true. You know, and that's just American citizens. I mean, and obviously there's tens of thousands more Afghans that we owe a debt to who served with us and would make great American patriots. But they're in an even worse position right now. It's tough to get anybody through the gates at all.
U.S. Congressman Dan Crenshaw, as we wrap up our conversation with him this morning on Mobile Mornings, and you talked about the emotional slogan. You know, from what I've read from you and heard from you, I mean, there's emotion involved in this for you as well, as somebody, Special Forces, Navy SEAL, did your job over there. Somebody else did the same. You know, you're obviously pretty ticked off about all this.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of ex-Special Forces, ex-military, working to get interpreters they know across. I mean, that's been the most successful so far. When somebody can make calls and they know that there's guys, you know, and there's the network of veterans and they know who's manning the gate. And we can at least say, look, this one is somebody you got to let through. It's been working to an extent over the last couple weeks, but unfortunately now they've really put a stop to a lot of it. And, you know, it's really depressing for a lot of veterans to see their old partners, in such dire straits here.
Congressman Dan Crenshaw, and a couple more questions. The word impeach has been thrown around a lot already, especially on the Republican side of things. Democrats, not necessarily all in favor of what Biden's done here, but impeachment. We use that word a lot over the last 4 years. Could that be on the horizon here for Biden?
You know, anything's possible. It's certainly not while we don't have the majority. So, you know, I haven't given it much thought because people forget that we're in the minority,
right,
not in the majority. And then I'm elected to make serious judgments. It's easy to tweet out, you know, impeach him, do something about it. But then we have to actually think through what the legal case would be. Look, if I'm being honest, I think there's a much stronger case for impeachment just based on what Biden's done with the border. Because that's deliberately and intentionally refusing to enforce laws that are passed, and that is a very clear requirement in the Constitution that the executive must execute the laws, and a refusal to do so would be probably a better grounds if we're going to have a serious discussion about this kind of stuff.
U.S. Congressman Dan Crenshaw from Texas joining us on Mobile Mornings this morning. And before we go, I do want to thank you very much, Congressman, not just for your time today, but certainly the extraordinary service that you've given our country and our safety. And thank you, and to all the Special Forces and all to the veterans that did such a fantastic job in Afghanistan and elsewhere.
Hey, it was great to be with you. Thanks.
Yes, sir.
Congressman Dan Crenshaw, congressman out of Texas, of course, spent a lot of his life in Special Forces and fighting overseas for America, and pleasure to have him on this morning.
19 minutes after 8 o'clock, Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5.
Thanks, Kane. 824, FM Talk 106.5. I want to thank Congressman Dan Crenshaw for coming on with us this morning. Fantastic interview there, getting his thoughts. This segment of Mobile Mornings brought to you by local law firm Tobias, McCormick & Comer. Thousands of crashes involving intoxicated drivers occur on our very own roads here every single year. And if you're one of the unfortunate people who have been hurt or have lost a loved one in a wreck caused by such a driver, you're probably wondering about your legal options. Well, the car accident lawyers at Tobias, McCormick & Comer are experienced in handling cases involving impaired drivers, and they can help you navigate the legal process with compassion and skill. It's a local law firm. They're from Mobile. They serve Mobile and Baldwin counties, and they have more than 70 years of combined experience at Tobias, McCormick & Comer. They secure the best legal outcomes for those who need the skill and compassion of their firm. Tobias, McCormick & Comer, their website, tmclawyers.com, and get a free consultation, not just drunk driving accidents, but a number of any other injury questions you have. 432-5001. That free consultation again, 432-5001.
Your hair looks so spectacular this morning. I'm going to get a picture.
You're going to take a picture of it?
Take a picture.
Well, Thank you. I mean,
Leanna, to post it. I wish I, you know, this is my dream is to have hair like that.
Well,
I mean, it's not the only dream I have.
I'd be lying if I didn't come into the studio knowing that I was showing off my hair for you every single morning.
Well, so, today, you've taken it to another level. I'll get around to it.
I've reached back to early pandemic levels of hair cutting. You know, when everyone shut down at the beginning of the pandemic last year, I probably went 3 months without getting a haircut, had a really nice flow going. And, you know, you can get a haircut now, but I thought, why? Right? Why not let the locks flow? So that's what I'm going with right now.
It's looking great.
Thank you.
It's really looking great.
Thanks.
I was looking at this. This is pretty interesting right here, I thought, and on the heels of talking with Congressman Crenshaw. It's not really it's not cheap to run a country. So the experts are saying that the Taliban's soon going to – they're going to have to run that country. So they're taking over. So now it's like you're in possession of this big wet dog. Mm-hmm. Good luck, right?
Yeah.
70% of the government budget is foreign aid.
70%.
Going to Afghanistan now. It's not – that foreign aid is going to dry up.
Yeah, and I've thought about that. When they ask you to send money to Afghans to help with this, won't the Taliban just strong-arm it out of their grip?
You would think.
Yeah.
I mean, they're running it. So, again, 70% of their budget came from foreign aid. Where's that money going to come from now? They're thinking it could be drugs.
Mm-hmm. Opium, huh?
Opium, yeah. The Taliban could be big time in the well, I guess they are in the drug business, but now it's going to have to take up a whole lot of their time because they've got to run the country some way. And, you know, the level of poverty is going to be incredible over there.
Now, the thing about that, and I think I read that initially, you know, 20 years ago when the Taliban was running the country and doing the beheadings in the soccer stadium and all that, that I thought I read that they were not allowing opium production because of their religious views, mm-hmm. but and maybe they've changed track since then. Or maybe even then they were allowing it. But since they were in control 20-odd years ago, there's been a new drug that's come along called fentanyl that's being produced en masse by China. And that has really, from what I've read, cut the opium production costs at the knees because this fentanyl is, you know, produced by people. They don't necessarily need, I don't think, to grow opium to produce fentanyl. So that is the, you know, it's the killer of the opium drug sales, from what I've read.
83% of the global opium production was estimated to come from Afghanistan between 2015 and 2020.
Hmm. That's still a lot then, because fentanyl was around during those years.
Yes, it was. This is something that internationally a lot of people are very concerned about is you know, how do you fill that? How does the Taliban fill that gap? And you're right. 20 years ago, they were running the country. And now, once again, it's reunion time.
Yeah.
Taliban is back, and we've got, what, 5 days left to get our people out?
And these idiots that believe that, you know, this is going to be some, you know, that they're going to be good actors now that they've got control of the nation.
Crenshaw said it. It's the ideology. They're not going – look, the war is never ending because they're always at war with our ideals and with us. So you want to call it a never-ending war. Also, I recommend that you check out Dan Crenshaw's op-ed in the Wall Street Journal where he talks about the myth that this was an ongoing 20-year war. It really wasn't because we really were losing very few lives over there. Special operations were doing crucial things with our Afghan partners. And all that, he said, that, you know, people are kind of depressed about this. He said he doesn't know for sure where morale is. But his guess would be it's not real good right now. I like the way he just spoke to us, just straight up, like we're sitting next to him, you know?
Yeah.
At a sports bar having a beer. That guy's not a politician. He's a leader.
Yeah. Amen. Hey, we've got Rob Holbert with Lanyap coming up next. And at some point this hour, we have to talk about this school district in Kentucky. Their big problem, not with mask mandates or vaccines, but the school children acting and dressing like cats.
Okay. Great. FM Talk 106.5, 8:35 with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig. Much thanks to U.S. Congressman Dan Crenshaw, our guest in the from 8 till about 8:20. Hung around with us a long time and got a lot of things off his chest, and I'm sure he'll do more of that as things continue to unfold or not in Afghanistan.
A pretty common refrain on the text line after Congressman Crenshaw was on. I think Dan summed it up here. He said, this is what a lot of people are saying, tell that bad bleep bloop to run for president already. Now, the bleep bloop was added by me. There's an actual another word installed there on the text line. But I think a lot of people are kind of wanting, you know, somebody who shoots it straight to you like that.
You know, you had pretty good facts on how he won that seat in Texas. So he was really an underdog and an outsider.
I was rereading over his biography, and that first congressional race that Dan Crenshaw won, I think back in 2018, he won by 155 votes in the Republican primary leading in, and the candidate that he bested by those 155 votes was endorsed by both Senator Ted Cruz and Governor Abbott in Texas. So that's how he made his entrance into politics, was by beating a well-funded and well-represented Republican challenger.
Proving again that Navy SEALs can swim upstream without a problem. Rob Holber from LandyachtMobile.com is on the line right now. Rob, good morning.
Morning. How are you guys doing today?
Just great.
Yeah, and we've got elections to talk about here. We also have an incredible story coming up that we have to talk about involving a couple hammers. But I want to start with the big news from this week's municipal elections. Mayor Sandy Stimson wins a third term going away over Councilman Fred Richardson and Judge Carlos Finley. Were you surprised by that at all?
No. I mean, I thought that it would that he would win without a runoff, but I didn't expect him to win with such a big number. I didn't expect him to get 57%, But yeah, I did think he was going to win without a runoff. That was my thought. The one that did surprise me, the one I totally missed is Herman Thomas making the runoff in District 1. I really didn't expect people to vote for Herman Thomas, but you know, he's there. I still don't think he'll win that race, but I didn't think he would make it before, so anything could happen. I'm still just amazed that people would vote for him, but. Maybe he's convinced people that he wasn't spanking others, although in his application for readmittance to the bar in Florida, he admits in that application to spanking people. He just claims he wasn't spanking prisoners.
He
was a freelance spanker. He just kind of went around and spanked people. But,
how does that pay?
Not prisoners. You know,
I don't think it pays too well.
Yeah. I mean, so he admits he spanks people. I mean, you know, it's bizarre behavior.
Yeah, he could almost turn that negative into a positive in this campaign, in this runoff. You know, use the spanking term, and he'll be going up against Corey Penn. And talking to some people who are in, you know, other council races and some people that are in city government, they said that they thought that the judge, that Herman Thomas, did pretty well in the debates in the lead up to that election, but it ended up being pretty close between among those top three challengers in District 1, but now it's down to Corey Penn and Herman Thomas, and that's one of, what, three runoffs we have on the way?
Yeah, we've got a runoff in 6 and a runoff in 2 as well. So you've got in 6, it's Josh Wood and, help me out.
Scott Jones is the other one there.
Yeah, Scott Jones.
With the endorsement.
And then in 2, you've got LaVon Manzi and William Carroll.
Mm-hmm.
And William, you know, it was kind of like, all night long it looked like LaVon was going to win it without a runoff, and right at the very end, William caught him and just got to the point where he was able to get into the runoff. So, of course, William was a former city councilman, so that should be a pretty interesting one as well. They're all of them are going to have some real interest for us. I think that are going to have I don't know if you could really just definitively say who's going to win any one of them.
I was on the cover of your publication maybe 13 years ago with William Carroll. We were kind of redoing a famous shot that's at the Callahan's Bar, right?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. So I've seen William back in town now. I know he's been in and out, but I have seen him at a few events in town, so he's making his presence felt. Let's go to the top, to the mayor's race. What surprised you there?
I mean, there's really not much that surprised me other than just that Sandy won with such a good margin. But I think it's just, you know, you look at that race and it was boring all the way around. And I think that's a big reason there was such poor turnout for the election this time. It was really bad. I mean, it's really, really low numbers for turnout. But, you know, I don't think that his challengers really had a lot they could, you know, it stuck to him. I mean, that was the thing. It's, you know, I think most people look at it and say, you know, the city's definitely doing better. And there are a lot of things on the plate here in this 4 years that he wants to finish up. And if he finishes them up or gets them underway, that, you know, he will leave office. And I think he will leave office after this next 4 years. I think he will be done. I don't think he's going to stick around for another one. And, you know, that he'll leave with a lot of things accomplished.
You know, with the results that came in from the mayor's race in all seven districts, it seems like, you know, years of having your name talked about at these city council meetings and the experience involved in running prior races really paid off, with three of the sitting members winning pretty handily and LaVon Manzi just barely missing out on that 50% threshold to avoid the runoff. But as you said, even his competitor there, William Carroll, has experience. Herman Thomas's name has been mentioned a long time. A lot of these fresh new faces that really worked hard going door to door and trying to pull out the vote, they really had nothing on the name recognition and the bonds that were already made with these other council members.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, name recognition is huge in these races because, you know, you don't get a chance to see them all, and people don't pay a lot of attention. You know, they don't really read about these things or watch. You know, they wait till it's close to election time. I had a lot of people writing me and texting me and saying, hey, what do you think in such and such race? You know, the day before the election, there's a lot of folks who weren't really obviously paying a lot of attention going into it, and I think that's why name recognition is what it is. You walk in and you say, I know that guy's name. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, maybe people voted for Herman Thomas just because they know his name,
right?
You know, I'm sure there's some that just said, oh, I know his name. They maybe don't know that he was accused of spanking prisoners and having sex with them, but you know, that's just, you know, he has name recognition one way or the other,
right?
Yeah. All news is good news.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. Any news is good news, even when it's apparently really bad news.
Yeah, that is the old thing, you know. Just spell my name right.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, with three, possibly four new faces on the council, revisit some of the things we've, you know, had passed through city council over the years, and I think the top of the list being annexation. Now, there's been talk of the mayor revisiting annexation before this new term comes on, but what do you think the direction of this new council will look like, or is it too early to tell with these runoffs still yet to come?
I mean, it's hard to tell. I think you're going to remove at least immediately two major impediments to, I mean, the people who conflict with the mayor the most are Bess Rich and Fred Richardson. Mm-hmm. They are the ones, over the last 4 years, they have kind of formed a little union of just being, you know, getting, fighting with the mayor about stuff. And you know, somebody say he's fighting with them, but there's conflict. And those two are gone, so there's not immediately anybody who's going to conflict with the mayor right off the bat. That may change. I mean, you know, you get three new people in there, four new people, there's going to be a whole new dynamic. But I do think, you know, when you talk about incumbents getting reelected or doing well, you know, that's a testament, I think, to the council. You know, they've done a good job, you know, for the most part. I think, you know, they get some of the glory as well. It's not all the mayor. I know they always say, well, you know, we need credit as well, and they do get credit for this. I think they're getting credit from the voters. I think when you see somebody, you see Jimmy Gregory and Joel Daves and C.J. Small reelected with huge margins, you know, that's the voters saying, hey, you know, we like what you're doing.
I have a feeling that John Williams, I know that he did not run for council, obviously, but he's still a show up and be there guy. I saw him down at the Greer's store on St. Louis. I just have a feeling that John feels like he's got something to offer. I don't know in what way and what form he'll do that, but I don't think he's just going to put Mobile on the back burner now. I think he's too much of a man who would like to influence change or keep things going in a certain direction.
Yeah, I'm sure that, you know, I'm sure John will. He's a, you know, he definitely is a guy who has interest in the city, and I, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Fred Richardson's involved in a board or something like that as well. You know, he's been doing things, love him or hate him, he's been involved in the city for a long, long time, and I doubt that's just going to end immediately.
So, you know, enough about the local politics. I want to talk about Gabe Tynes, one of his stories in the newest issue of Lanyap, and some cross-state hammer-on-hammer action.
This is my favorite story of the week is we are all aware of Mike Slocum, the Alabama Hammer, the attorney who has his, let's just say, ridiculous commercials. On, you know, he's shooting deer, he's punching people out in a hallway. It's just all sorts of crazy stuff. And he, you know, he's the Alabama Hammer. Well, turns out that there's a Texas Hammer. And the Texas Hammer was the Texas Hammer before the Alabama Hammer. And the he is alleging that the Alabama Hammer ripped off his commercials, and you know, in there he's basically trying to steal the Hammer name. So these guys are fighting over who gets to be called Hammer.
Yeah.
Now the Texas Hammer is also an attorney.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Texas Hammer is also an attorney. Okay. He's a personal injury attorney. And you know, actually, this made the HBO show Last Week Tonight, or with This Week Tonight.
Yeah, Last Week Tonight.
Last Week Tonight, and with John Oliver, and that's I saw it. Well, he started talking about the Texas Hammer. I'm like, well, we've got a hammer here in Alabama, and then he went straight to that. I'm like, okay, this is what the story's about. But Gabe did a good job of going and looking up the suit and finding out what they're fighting about, and it's pretty humorous. I mean, if you've ever watched those commercials and just wondered what in the world they're thinking, there's really this is a big deal with these guys. Mm-hmm. They want to be the Hammer. You know, I mean, apparently Slocum is also in D.C. He's the D.C. Hammer.
Oh,
wow.
He's
wow.
not just the Alabama Hammer.
He's hammering in multiple states.
Texas, so they're really just hammering the whole thing out.
Hammering across state lines. So yeah, I want my personal injury attorney to have all the bluster of a drunken Conor McGregor. That's what I want.
That's exactly what you want. You just really want what he's most worried about is being called the Hammer.
Yes. So I'm guessing these two fellas aren't content with a handshake and one going their way is the jackhammer and one is the mallet. They're going to fight this out.
It does not appear that way. You know? I think they've got to get out there. They should have some sort of hammer off. I don't know. You know, maybe they drive railroad spikes for a week or do something. Let's see who can hammer the most.
If we could get him on a conference call and say, hey, listen, just calm down. Dalton's got a great idea. Dalton, go ahead.
Yeah.
Maybe that could solve the whole thing.
Break out the jackhammer.
Neither one
name.
Of you can be the sledgehammer. We're going to put the sledgehammer away. What kind of hammer would you?
Yeah, and the lead, you mentioned the lead from Gabe's story. I mean, maybe I shouldn't reveal that. Just have everyone either hop online at landyapmobile.com.
I think we ought to just tell people, look, go read it. It's funny. It's good. It's a great lead. It's a terrific lead. I think if you like good writing, go read that story. It'll amuse you.
Yeah, I love good writing, and I love good local writing and investigations, which only Lanyap is doing. So if someone wants to sign up online or go get the new issue on stands, how do they do that, Rob?
Of course, you can go check out the purple boxes all over town, and we're loaded up with newspapers. And, of course, also go online at lanyapmobile.com, and you can get signed up there. It's $1.50 a week, 21 cents a day, as we like to say. I mean, it really helps us. It helps us keep the paper rolling. Keeps us able to provide news for y'all.
Rob, thanks for your time again this morning, man. We appreciate it a lot, and a lot to take in there, including the hammer off or whatever that's.
I think we all should by next week have some sort of implement that we would like to be our nickname. Let's get back together on this. Let's circle back on it.
We'll join back in 1 week's time.
You know, when I played youth hockey in Nashville, my nickname was the Hammer.
How about that?
And neither of these guys have come after me. They're scared. Hey, coming up, more Mobile Mornings, including a school district in Kentucky where the kids won't stop acting like cats.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Kane. 8:53, wrapping it up on this Thursday edition of Mobile Mornings. This segment brought to you by our good friends over at 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Now, it's the world's largest junk removal service, but locally owned franchise. Trey Bennett and the crew doing a fantastic job in both counties. You know, they work on both sides of the bay. And having 1-800-GOT-JUNK come out to your house and take care of all that hard work for you is priceless. But even if it wasn't priceless and you do have to pay for them to come out, the pricing is up front. You know, they're not going to charge you after the fact with all kinds of charges that you didn't expect, that you didn't see coming. They're very forthcoming and honest about what it'll cost, and it's well worth it in my mind, and also for the many people here at FM Talk 106.5 who have had 1-800-GOT-JUNK come out and take care of the junk for them.
Including me.
Including Dan.
Yes.
A very convenient pickup. You set up up a time that works for you and works for them, and they'll show up in that window of time. And they also dispose of your junk responsibly. Pretty much anything you have, they will take from your house. You don't have to bust your hump in that midday Alabama summer heat getting it done. You can call 1-800-GOT-JUNK and have them do it for you. So give them a call today. 1-800-GOT-JUNK is the number, and the website is 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com.
Before you get to the story about the Kentucky Wildcats.
Yeah, nice.
I've got one for you. Real quick story. A new survey, 55% of us, any of us, would like to do this. Relive our childhood. We'd do it in a minute. Now, that's 55% of us.
Yes.
Okay, so what did we, and especially the magical years of 7 to 10.
Oh, I remember those years. They were fantastic.
It was all misery to me. Anyway, here's what we like about going back to our childhood. No money worries. Okay. Summer breaks from school. Here's the thing for me. I would get like a stomach ache when school was about to let back in.
Sure you would.
So it was not a good trade-off.
You would actually have a stomach ache, or you acted like you would have
one? I would have a stomach ache saying, oh man, I got to go back to school.
Yeah.
Also, the excitement of going to the beach, birthday parties, and sleeping in. So there you go. 55. So look around you. More than half of the people around you right now say, oh, I would do that in a minute.
Yeah.
Back to the childhood.
Now, it sounds lovely, but let's be honest. When you're a kid, you don't know what it's like to have bills paid or what it's like to have to wake up early every morning. So, really, you know, you've heard first world problems.
Yeah, you have nothing to compare it to when you're a kid.
You're still going to have your own problems.
Listen, survey people, it wasn't mine. Not all it's cracked up to be. I can tell you right that now. So anyway, I thought that was interesting.
So, you know, I've been teasing this hour, and I absolutely have to get to this story before
Kentucky Wildcats.
Sean Sullivan scoops it from me on the midday show. Meade County, Kentucky. They have an issue, and they're even having a school board meeting because of this issue.
Wow.
Now, we've had school board meetings here in Mobile and Baldwin counties over the last couple of weeks regarding the mask mandate in schools. And, well, that's not why they're going to have a school board meeting in Kentucky. They're dealing with an unusual situation. A large group of high school students are attending school, acting like and dressing as cats. Felines. That's right. And the superintendent of that district says the situation is being addressed. But according to a concerned grandparent, it's an ongoing problem that has many students on edge, Dan. This grandmother they talked to said, apparently, from what I understand, they're called furries. They identify with animals.
Is this a thing?
Furries have been a thing for a long time.
Wow, now, I was unaware of that.
There's an adult population of furries who like to dress up because it makes them feel a certain way. But the kids, I don't necessarily understand. So this grandmother continued. She said, they identify with animals. These people will hiss at you or scratch at you if they don't like something you're doing. So is she saying that there are high schoolers in Kentucky actively hissing and scratching at people that they don't like while they're walking down the side?
Where did this movement begin? Because I'm completely unaware of it.
Yeah, the furry tradition is a long and storied history, Dan.
Really? Alabama football?
Yeah, no one really knows exactly when or how it began. It's believed that the Duke of Furryton was the first one to do it 800 years ago. This grandmother said, I was hearing rumblings of this last year, but it got really bad when they went back to school this year. I have two grandkids in school, and they don't want to go to school anymore. So apparently this is like a kitty cat epidemic in Kentucky.
Oh, or how about this? Like, at first, you're like, man, I don't like going to school with all these furries. And then slowly, you become kind of, you graduate into the furry club because of peer pressure. They're all around you.
Do you have to get, like, jumped in to be a furry? Like a gang of some sort? And, you know, they've outlawed certain things you can wear at school, like beer shirts, you know, Budweiser, Bud Light. And they said you can't wear hats. But this grandmother says they are allowed to wear cat ears, cat tails, masks, leashes. It doesn't make sense. So there's been a petition, over 1,000 signatures, parents saying they're done with the kids dressing up like cats. And now a school board meeting coming up next month to decide what to do with all these feral animals.
We have to see that school board meeting.
We do.
That's masks, whatever.
Let's see if we can set up an interview with a furry.
I would love that. And who are the parents who are saying, oh, that's John's acting like kids a cat today?
Kids are going to be kids, am I right?
8:59, Jeff Poore on the way on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks again to U.S. Congressman Dan Crenshaw, our special guest today.